As of right now, we are at war.
How desperate you call on such lost creatures to defend you.
How desperate am I? You threaten my world with war. You steal a force you can't hope to control. You talk about peace and you kill because it's fun. You have made me very desperate. You might not be glad that you did. There was an idea. Bring together a group of remarkable people, see if they can become something more. Like the battles that we never could.
Welcome to Fury's Finest, a podcast about Marvel Crisis Protocol and the Marvel Universe. My name's Jesse Aiken, and I'm joined by my co-host, Chris Bruffett. How are you doing today, Chris?
Jesse, I'm feeling pretty good. We got some games tonight. We're going to roll some dice, see how things go. I'm excited about it. Still haven't decided who I'm playing yet, though.
That's me too. I'm definitely playing something new.
Something new.
Yeah.
I'm probably playing something old, unfortunately. I just haven't decided which.
Something old, a return?
I mean, it's probably going to be X-Force with Kitty Pryde and Bishop and included and see how that goes. But I have this desire. I've started hobbying my Asgardians, so.
Yes.
Prepare yourself to beat me easily.
Gotta love the Asgardians. Absolutely. Just adore that design space of them all being Asgardian, getting two power every power phase. It's just something that I love. Yeah, I love it.
And you know, got to be prepared for the new box coming out. I should be working on Spider Foes, obviously, like everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
It's the smart play, but I let my heart make a choice.
I love it. No, I would love to play against Asgard in person, especially with how much Asgard I assume we're going to play throughout this year, like we've talked about on the show, and I'm looking forward to it a lot too. And I'm really hoping Sif gives them the juice they need in the sense of like lower threat characters.
Yes.
Now, Jane and New Thor, I don't even know what those will do, but I'm excited.
I'm very curious to see what threat level we get on those pieces.
Oh, they said the New Thor is 6, so.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, he's a big boy.
So we've got, oh boy, a new 6 threat. When's the last time we had one of those?
Absolutely. And just curious if they have leaderships and what does that look like for Asgard getting their second leadership or third leadership? So time will tell. I'm very excited.
There's the Loki question.
Absolutely.
Loki convo?
I would love that.
I know you would.
If not, I think he's going to slot right in, at least in a like.
I hope he's affiliated, but he'll probably be played in affiliation either way.
Yeah, it'll be a decent splash regardless, I would assume. So
I guess.
It's exciting. And obviously all this mutant talk we've been having, I've been really excited to get back to X-Men at some point this year, but not in a crazy rush. I do want to dig into that Professor X leadership, see what that's like, get a painted Nightcrawler on the table. Same with Kitty. List goes on and on, but not rushing to it yet.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I think it's Asgard for me. I think I might try to get them ready and play them before the box comes out. Just really get a feel for the affiliation, for all the models, how they play with each other, you know, what crises I want to run, things like that. And then, you know, the new box will shake all of that up and change it all.
Well, of course. Yeah. But you get those basics down. Absolutely. So it's super exciting.
Important.
Yeah. And they're a really nuanced faction. So the basics are kind of paramount to know how to play them going forward. So I think it's a good idea.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. But speaking of mutants, we're back to mutants today, which is very exciting.
Oh, goodness.
And we're going to be in mutants for a while. And we told you guys that.
Madness here on Fury's Finest.
Yeah, but they are all different seasons. And currently the season we're in is the X-Force, Weapon X, Weapon Plus program season, subset of mutant stuff before we move on to other seasons.
Getting bigger.
Absolutely getting bigger by the day. Yeah. And AMG's making it bigger too with the inclusion of Maverick later this year.
Oh my gosh.
He'll slot right into this season per se. We'll have to return to him.
I'm so curious about Maverick. And then I mean, Weapon X as well. Are we going to get a Weapon X leadership on an actual character card? I don't know. It's going to be pretty interesting. I could see us getting that Weapon X leadership so that people don't have to buy the $100 box to play that affiliation.
Mm.
But we'll see.
Well, absolutely, see, for sure. And yeah, time will tell on that, but we are back in Mutants today and we're talking Weapon X, Weapon Plus program through a different lens of Laura Kinney, which is very exciting, X-23.
But before that, Jesse, we've got to get to a little business. Fury's Finest is supported by Mr. Laser. Go to mr-laser.square.site for all of your Marvel Crisis Protocol needs. And while at checkout, please remember to use the discount code FURY5, one word, no capital, Roman numeral 5 at the end. Go ahead and get those pre-orders in for all these ridiculous new boxes that Atomic Mass is throwing at us. And just get prepared, get hyped to start your clipping, your gluing, and your painting.
Absolutely. Place those orders now and get your pre-order secured. Fury's Finest is also supported by iWarGame. iWarGame makes the best marked mass for MCP in the business. We're going to use them literally tonight, and we highly recommend checking them out at iWarGame.net. Use our code FFPODCAST to get your 10% off your orders of mats on the website. And like I said last episode, the month of April, they are running a special where all the mats are already discounted. And yes, our discount stacks with their month of April discount. So get in there. Get yourself some mats. Buy order of two or three and get yourself some variety for your boards.
Buy some for your in-laws. Buy some for your parents. Just shower everyone in MCP mats.
You should absolutely do it. And of course, our show cannot function without our patrons. Our patrons support us at patreon.com/furiesfinest. If you enjoy the show, we'd like to join our private Discord community, private leagues, painting gallery with no name, and much more. Check out our Patreon tiers. We take this time to thank all of our patrons for their support. Chris, and like we said, we're catching up on patrons. We're getting through the backlog, and we have three patrons to thank today: Rich, Corey, and Curtis.
Thank you so much. As always, we have to thank our Avenger level producer, the man that really keeps the lights on around here, and that's Sean. Sean, thank you so much for your continued unwavering support.
Thank you so much, Sean. You are our producer. All right, Chris, let's get right into lore today with X-23. Who is she?
Well, before I really start things off, we got to take care of something a little more serious. This is going to be an episode where we talk about some fairly upsetting things. So a little bit of a content warning up top here. Not a child-appropriate episode. I would think we're going to have themes of self-harm, trafficking. It's X-Force, so there's going to be a lot of violence as well as some torture. It's going to be an interesting one, but maybe one not for the young children's. Of course, I can do is give you the information and you make the choice from there. So let's talk about Laura Kinney. Who is she? Laura is a clone of Logan, the Wolverine. She is an assassin. And she's a character that really deals with some interesting themes. Just like I mentioned a few of them up top there, the self-harm thing, very big in everything we're going to cover today, as well as just this idea of being an outcast, being an other, not fitting in with your peers, bullying in the form of, you know, torture and just being raised to be an object, not necessarily a human, and someone that finds their humanity over the course of their comic book appearances. And that's something I really tried to stress with the Cable episode, was Cable started off as a real jerk in Marvel Comics. He was this kind of, I want to say he was like a 17-year-old's idea of a really masculine, tough dude, if that makes sense to you guys. Like, talking about emotion was not on the table, right? Emotional availability for Cable was not a thing that would ever have crossed his mind early. But it doesn't take too long. Some other writers get a hold of him, Fabian DeCeza, and we start seeing that character development. Similarly, here with Laura, we see a lot of character development in discovering her own humanity, realizing that she's not a tool, that she is not just a weapon, and realizing that she has agency in her own life and she can do more than just take orders. So there's a lot to touch on here. And I guess, Jesse, we better get started. Let's talk about Laura Kinney's superpowers. Now, as I said, she is a clone of Wolverine. I think we all know that at some point she will take the Wolverine mantle. wear the costume. I think she looks awesome in it. I think she's a great Wolverine, but she is a Wolverine. So she's got claws. She's got two in her hands instead of three. They are adamantium dipped and sharpened. So they are very, very, very sharp. She does not have an adamantium skeleton, however, just the claws. And speaking of claws, she's got some extra ones that Logan just does not have. They are one claw in each of her feet. So you'll find she will use the claws in her hands as her primary offensive weapons. And those foot claws are kind of a hidden self-defense mechanism, something she can pull out really at unexpected moments. But at the same time, she does some wild sweeping kicks and things with them. So, I mean, just scary. She's been literally raised since she was born to be an assassin. So some of the finest martial arts training available. I mean, her whole life was centered around taking her humanity away from her, making her an object, making her this trained killer. And part of that was imbuing a trigger scent into Laura. And this trigger scent, you know, a little vial of whatever this trigger, this chemical compound is, that would just trigger an animalistic rage from X-23, which is very similar to what we see from Wolverine at times. She is a Wolverine. She's got that feral kind of component, that just mindless base instinct, kill what's in front of you type component, and it is triggered with this trigger scent. Luckily, this trigger scent does not stay a part of her character for forever, because it is a real bummer of a storytelling device. Constantly moment of intimacy with a loved one or an emotional moment, and then, oh, someone rubbed the trigger scent on you, I have to kill you. You know, it's just, I'm glad it's gone. I'll just say that. But it is part of her character and really does shape her character. And all of this, of course, is focused through the lens of her insane healing factor, much like Wolverine. This is the healing factor that makes Wolverine different and special in universe. Wolverine, since his inception, has been the target of various governmental and supervillain programs trying to get their hands on his genetic code to try to make these perfect self-healing soldiers with heightened senses and just that Wolverine never say die attitude, right? He's not just super popular outside of comics with comic book readers, but in universe, Wolverine is extremely special, especially earlier on, because we've got Deadpool now, we've got Daken now, we've got X-23, we've got clones of X-23 now as well. So thinking back in the 70s, late 70s, the 80s, the 90s, Wolverine is a really, really important piece of the Marvel 616 world, and that is how we get Laura. Before I get more into her history, we have to talk about her first appearance in comics. And Jesse, this one is cool because, much like Harley Quinn, X-23 is first introduced in a cartoon. She makes her X-Men debut in X-Men Evolution Season 3, Episode 10. Title of the episode is X-23, and she is voiced by Andrea Libman.
What a show.
It was a really good show. I missed it at the time, but I have since revisited it, and it was much better than my, however old I was at the time, mind wanted to believe back then. It's a really good show. She is created by Craig Kyle and Kyle Yost, and they will be the ones that write the comic book bringing her into the Marvel 616. This happens in NYX number 3, February 2004. It's interesting. So let's get into this. Let's start with her origin story, and that will bring us up to when she gets introduced in comics. Her origin story, of course, will be revealed after the NYX run, in which she is a trafficked underage working girl in New York City. Really edgy, and I'm going to just say it, it's not super tastefully done either. I don't particularly like this, and I'm not the only one. A lot of folks seem to just not really consider this too heavily in Laura's comic book histories. It's something that we don't really have to go back to a lot. I think volume one of X-23 is far, far, far more important and more illustrative of the character and who she actually becomes, more so than this NYX run, but it does happen. Anyway, Laura is just inextricably tied to Wolverine at all turns. So Laura is the product of a Weapon X kind of revival program that is being run by the son of the Weapon X, one of the Weapon X scientists, one of the ones that Logan kills at the very end of his escape. So this is the son, Dr. Xander Rice, has grown up his whole life blaming Wolverine for the death of his father. And to an extent, that's correct, but also your father was a monster. So we're going to start this new Weapon X program with a vial of genetic material from Wolverine that was dropped by Xander's father when Wolverine killed him. This vial is going to be recovered and kept in storage or whatever. And Xander is going to restart this program and get his revenge. This genetic sample is a little bit screwed up. And Dr. Sarah Kinney is going to be the bringer of bad news here. The Y chromosome portion of the genetic sample is unrecoverable. It would set the program back years to try to reconstruct it, if it could ever be successfully reconstructed in the first place. So Dr. Sarah suggests that we go with the old double X chromosome. And of course, Xander being a terrible person, just, it's not acceptable, right? It's got to be a male. It's got to look like Wolverine, all of these things, so he can, you know, live out his revenge fantasies. Well, Dr. Kinney goes ahead and gets this embryo viable, this female clone of Wolverine viable. And as a punishment for going against his orders, Dr. Xander forces her to carry this embryo to term in her own body, to be the surrogate mother. He's really just psychotic. No humanity in this man. And because of that, he lashes out and treats everyone else as inhuman objects as well. We're going to skip forward 7 years in the comics, and little X-23 trains every day. She has got two connections in her life to humanity. She has her sensei, who is training her in all forms of martial art and combat. This man really does try to connect with her humanity whenever possible, and as much as he can without being too overt and getting himself killed. And she's got Dr. Sarah Kinney, who also, you know, she carried this child to term. She is, for all intents and purposes, this child's mother. So there is an emotional bond there. And Sarah really does try to inject a little humanity into Laura during her upbringing. But for the most part, this child is just treated absolutely horrible by Dr. Xander Rice, to the point of when her powers haven't manifested yet, Xander straps her in to an experimentation room and just starts dousing her with lethal doses of radiation to try to jumpstart her powers. And what do you know? It works. The healing powers come online. The claws manifest, pop out. And so to take it one step further, Xander is going to extract these claws from X-23's body without anesthesia, dip them in adamantium, sharpen them, and reattach them into the body once again without anesthesia. So this young child is feeling this open surgery on her the whole time. I mean, just absolutely gruesome stuff, truly gruesome. So during this, the kind of beginning of the end of this phase of Laura's life is going to be her mother, Sarah, will become aware that Sarah's niece and sister are in trouble. So she's going to send her on a mission to free these two from an assassination attempt. And so this is going to bring those two into Laura's life, Megan, the niece, cousin, and her aunt. And this is going to start the chain reaction. Once X-23 returns from this mission, Xander is going to use her for an extremely personal mission to, this one's tough to say. He's going to use the trigger scent to force Laura to kill Xander's assistant, Xander's assistant's husband, and family, the Sutters, and all because the assistant was having an extramarital affair with Xander, accidentally became pregnant, and Xander did not want to take responsibility, so he kills the whole family using X-23. Shortly before leaving for this mission, Xander is going to reveal to X-23 her future sisters. There's an entire room full of pods incubating more clones, X-24 through X-50, okay? Long story short, X-23 is going to do the bad stuff. She had no choice. The trigger scent was involved. The trigger scent is also going to be involved. She is going to be forced to kill her sensei, and then she's going to be forced to kill her mother. While her mother is in process of dying, Sarah will give X-23 the name Laura, tell her that she loves her, and basically say, just kill everyone. So she does. Everyone at this this facility, agents, Xander Rice himself, all of them will die at X-23's hands. She will destroy all the cloning pods to make sure that this doesn't happen again. Although, spoiler alert, it will. That's how we get Gabby. But that's from Alchemax, different program, right? And the very, very last gesture Sarah Kinney will give to her daughter is a letter and a picture. This letter saying, I love you, giving her the name Laura, reiterating all that stuff. And then also pictures of Charles Xavier, Wolverine, and the Xavier Institute. The next thing Laura knows, she's going to be arrested by S.H.I.E.L.D. She's going to wake up in an interrogation room, bound and gagged, basically staring at Captain America and Matt Murdock. After an interrogation, they're going to come to understand Laura's plight and the fact that she had no agency in any of these murders and assassinations she's done. And she's, at this point, she's killed a lot of people. Like I told you about the ones getting her out of this facility and directly relating to her long-term story. But through this all, she's been being sent on missions to kill world leaders, whoever. If you've got money, Laura Kinney, X-23 at the time, would kill whoever you wanted for the right price. And through no agency of her own. But she tells them everything. And Laura's going to be to the care of her aunt and niece. And Debbie, her aunt, is going to have a boyfriend. This boyfriend, it turns out, is a secret agent, works for the facility, same folks that created Laura in the first place, right? In her origin story, we got rid of her personal big bad, right? So Xander Rice is out of the picture, isn't going to show up to take the place of that reoccurring big bad guy. We're going to get a character, Kimora. Kimora is not a mutant, but a genetically enhanced mutate with similar powers to Luke Cage. Her skin is indestructible, and that's going to be the rock to Laura Kinney's scissors. Those claws can't cut through that skin. What can Laura do? Also, Kimora is just a big bad lady, dude. She can throw it out. So Kimora has tormented Laura throughout her life, but we're getting that picture given to us now. So this is going to be a tragedy in Laura's life, not because she ends up killing her own family or anything again. Eventually, Debbie and Megan will be safe, but they will have to be safe away from Laura, which is the real tragedy here, because this is the first time outside of the two kind people in her life in the facility, this will be the first time Laura's just been accepted and loved and felt those feelings and had a home, a true home. And I'm sorry here, listener, I did mess up some timing a little bit. It's after Laura saves her aunt and niece in San Francisco that Captain America and Matt get a hold of her and interrogate her. So I apologize for that. I did get that a little mixed up in my order of operations. But there's one more thing I want to mention about this Captain America thing, and this is a reoccurring theme with Laura. The idea with Captain America and Matt Murdock was to get Laura to S.H.I.E.L.D. And during this interrogation, Steve Rogers realizes pretty quickly that if they send Laura to S.H.I.E.L.D., she will quickly just become an assassination tool for them as well. She's a teenage girl at this point. They will not let her have that humanity, that personhood, just as much as Xander Rice wasn't going to have it. She might have been serving the greater good, doing this for S.H.I.E.L.D., or at least in name, in theory, serving the greater good, but the outcome would be the same. This teenage girl that has never had her own agency would still not have her own agency. She might be working for the good guys, but she'd still be doing the same thing. So Steve doesn't take her. And this is where she's going to be first meet Wolverine. Steve is going to kind of leave her in his care in a way. Wolverine will reveal that he's known a little bit about Laura. Sarah Kinney, Laura's mother, did send a letter before she died to Wolverine. But of course, Wolverine at this point is really not sure about this whole thing, his role in it, and what he should do. Another wonderful thing about Laura Kinney's story is we get to see character development, not only from Laura herself, but from people around her as well in relation to her. We're going to see this a lot of it with Wolverine, a little bit with Gambit, and a little bit with White Queen as well, as far as major X-Men characters. So canonically, this is when NYX is going to happen. It feels weird, but you have to understand NYX in real life, in the real life timeline, is published first. And all of this other stuff I just talked about is revealed in X-23 Volume 1. So we've got a little bit of retconning going on here. We've got a little bit of shaping the story in ways they didn't expect when NYX came out. And we also have a little bit of two different creative groups having two different ideas. So I'm happy that the Craig Kyle and Kyle Yost idea of X-23 kind of comes through and wins here, because this NYX, it's an interesting story and it really does tug on the heartstrings, but it's tough, man. An underage sex worker trying to escape her pimp and abuser, making some friends, some very, very loose friendships, and then just leaving those friends to their fate. It's very weird. The friends will resurface again later in Laura's life, but thinking outside of, thinking in a meta way, from a publisher's perspective almost, it's kind of disjointed. But after NYX, Laura's going to still be in New York City. She's going to be in Mutant Town working as a waitress, where she will get involved in some shenanigans. She's going to end up killing some thugs that were trying to kill another mutant. Given her power set and her claws, this is going to be tied to Wolverine. The X-Men will get involved. This will be Laura and Wolverine's second meeting, but it's kind of an interesting thing. This is during a time when Chris Claremont has been brought back to write the X-Men. We have this issue coming out with Laura and Wolverine getting into a massive brawl. I mean, Laura's trying to kill Wolverine on site. They're acting like it's their first meeting. Yet in comics, in a comic that's published just shortly after this, they have a meeting that they met each other. It's established that Wolverine knows about Laura. And so we have, once again, two kind of creative teams not being on the same page. So we'll get around this later when Kyle and Yost will get a hold of X-23 again. And they'll explain this by saying it was prearranged. X-23 and Wolverine had decided that when they met each other for the first time in the presence, in kind of in public, I suppose, to act as if they did not know each other. So this is how the creators get around this. Take it for what it is. It is whatever. And during this time in X-23's life, she's very stunted emotionally. She's going to be extremely overprotective of Wolverine while hanging around with the X-Men. She's going to be an outcast, not talking a lot, a little not trusting anyone, and rightfully so, given her history. But we're going to start getting through that a little bit. during this time, she's going to have some team ups with Spider-Man. She's going to have a team up with the Black Widow. Spider-Man and her are going to do a fastball special, which is really fun. I think her being paired with Black Widow is really interesting. They do share a lot in common, especially brainwashing and being brought up as weapons and treated very inhumanely, having tried to have their humanity stripped from them. This will come back up again when Laura will join the Avengers Academy for a little while. But during this time, this is all pre-House of M. She will do some wild stuff. She's going to have an encounter with the, and I'm going to butcher this word. Guys, I do not know how to say this one. I'm sorry. Hawuka? It's the Saurons. It's those sentient creatures, they're reptilian humanoids.
Yep.
Evolved from Sauron in,
I love it,
in the Savage Land, right? She's going to save humanity, help Wolverine with that by saving Storm. She's going to briefly become Captain Universe, which is weird, but cool. Doesn't come up much in the future. It will a little bit, but not really anything that matters. Then we're going to get to the real stuff, and that's House of M, post-House of M, called Decimation. Laura will retain her powers. She will have been gone from the X-Men for a little while at this point, but post-House of M, Wolverine will bring her back into the fold. So she's going to rejoin the Xavier School here. She's going to start making friends, and that her, she's also going to have her first real crush, and that is on young Hellion. They're going to fight William Stryker, one of Mutantdom's favorite villains, and his purifiers. So this is when he's got all these purifiers running around trying to kill mutants, and Laura's going to kill them instead. And it's during this time, there's some really interesting interactions here. I think namely with Emma Frost. I think Emma Frost does some kind of outside of her modern character things. She's very, very worried. This is still trigger scent Laura, right? It's a major part of her character. If anyone gets a hold of this trigger scent, she could theoretically destroy the entirety of the X-Men while they sleep just because someone planted the trigger scent around. And Emma finds this to be extremely dangerous, but it is a little bit outside of Emma's characterization. Emma does some pretty mean things to try to drive X-23 away from the team, and she's doing it to try to keep everyone safe. But the one thing that has been true throughout Emma's history is her love for mutant children, especially those who have been mistreated. So it's a little bit weird, but I understand what's going on in the story. Eventually, it's going to be fine. Don't worry. It is going to lead to a really cool scene between Emma and Kimora, though. So that's totally worth it. Then we're going to get to my favorite. I'm gonna go a little bit faster here because this lore section has gone longer than I meant for it to already. We're going to get to the Messiah War. We're going to get to Laura on X-Force. She's going to join the X-Force team. And I think it's very notable. Wolverine does not want her on the team. It is Cyclops that does. And Wolverine even makes this point to Cyclops that she is not a weapon. She is a human being that has never not been taking orders. And Cyclops doesn't really care. The greater good kind of presupposes any emotional needs that Laura has for him. And this is going to be a cause for some kind of consternation between Laura and Cyclops for a long time. But she will serve on X-Force, and she will serve with flying colors. She looks great in her white and black X-Force costume with the red glowing eyes. She is a consummate X-Force member. She's going to leave X-Force eventually. The X-Force run, Second Coming, it's going to be by Kyle Yost, one of her founding creators. He's going to write her off the team. His intention was for her to just be not shown in comics for a long time after this, but it's comics, dude. Not going to happen. She actually has solo series lined up immediately after she gets out of these X-Force shenanigans. She's going to do some solo adventuring, get involved with some stuff with the Kingpin, whatever. What I want to talk about is X-23 Volume 3. Okay. We're going to get a really cool buddy cop kind of thing between Gambit and X-23. They're going to go on adventures together. X-23 is in a hard place. She's separated from the team. She's having some nightmares. This is during the time in which Wolverine is taken over by a demon known as Helverine. So that's going to be the beginning of this X-23 Volume 3. But we're gonna quickly get past that. And that's whatever. It's a very confusing time. If you like it, that's awesome. I haven't done the ins and the outs of the Helverine stuff to really make a decision whether I like it or not. To be honest, it's going to happen just through having to do stuff for this show. But what I love about this is we see this paternal side of Gambit. Uncle Gambit comes to play. This is Wolverine's daughter to him, and Wolverine is his buddy. So he's going to be there to help and Sherpa her through this adventure. And it's just, it's really delightful. This is the Gambit I love. This is the Gambit that I can't wait to talk about when we finally get to his episode.
Yeah.
Not the 90s womanizing, once again, 17-year-old testosterone-ridden boy's idea of a cool dude. This is an actual, what is it? It's, I heard it described recently. Gambit here is a flea bag, not a scumbag. Scumbags are bad people. Flea bags are Gambit, you know, heart of gold. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're not all together and a little rough around the edges, but they're going to do the right thing. And that's the version of Gambit I love, flea bag Gambit. And that's the version we get here. We're also going to have some fun with the Fantastic Four. She's going to be a babysitter. We love it. Superhero babysitters on this show, because Squirrel Girl also did that.
Yep.
We're going to talk about Squirrel Girl in this story when we get to part two, which is going to be our next character episode when we're going over Scout. Scout is so tied to X-23 that it's also going to be kind of an X-23 episode as well.
Scout as in Gabby.
Yes.
Yes.
Honey Badger in this game. Sorry.
A lot of lore there. Yeah, Honey Badger.
There's a lot of lore there. And I'm going to speed run the rest of this lore here because we are already over time. She will join the Avenger Academy during the Fear itself. She's going to leave the X-Men and try this Avenger thing out. She's going to develop some friendships in the team world here as well. This is all just constantly. She's learning how to become friends with people, how to trust people, how to find her own humanity, how to find her agency. That's what all of these stories are going to do. And then she's going to be put in Avengers Arena, which is, Avengers Arena came out right after Battle Royale came to the US on Netflix, I believe, and Hunger Games had been very, very popular. This idea of students having to fight it out to the death, right? So that's Avengers Arena. It's all these younger students stuck on an island with the villain Arcade, who just watched Battle Royale and wanted to do it for real. She's going to come out of this and she's going to disappear a while. She's going to leave. She's done Avengering for a while. After this, and this is going to be where I leave off for today, because this is going to bring us right up to all new, all different Wolverine, right up to the Hickman reset, right? But before Hickman's Secret Wars happens, Laura's going to start hanging out with the X-Men Blue. I think we've mentioned the X-Men Blue here. These are the original five X-Men displaced in time, brought into the modern 616 world out of the 60s. So it's teen Cyclops, teen Jean Grey, teen Angel, teen Beast, teen Iceman. She's going to develop a romantic relationship with Angel. I'm pretty cool on, personally. I understand what Angel sees in her. This is the same character that had a very, very large attraction and, I guess, for lack of a better word, crush on Psylocke during the 90s. It's been established that Angel's attracted to these types of characters, really troubled past and, frankly, violent women. You know, he's got the whole Archangel thing going on. But I don't see what Laura is into him for. So that's just my little editorial there. I don't get that. I don't go that far on these episodes. very often, but I really like X-23. So she's going to battle the purifiers with the X-Men Blue again. Her and Archangel will break up, get back together, break up again. And then once they're sent back to their own timeline, we just kind of forget that it happened. It's very comic books. But that is where we're going to leave X-23. Now, throughout this story, we've been dealing with not just these themes I've been talking about of her finding her own agency and finding her humanity and realize, you know, coming into who she is more than just a tool, more than just this clone of Wolverine, but really accepting her role as Wolverine's daughter and her role in this social ecosystem of the X-Men. But also we've been dealing with self-harm. And I think it was during her time with Gambit that it really comes to a head, and Gambit really kind of helps her through it, because we just don't see it as much after her adventures with Gambit, which is another, it's just another point for Gambit, dude. I mean, I don't know what to say. Gambit rules. So anyway, that is X-23 up to Secret Wars. And we will go into more detail post-Secret Wars when she adopts the mantle of Wolverine through the lens of Honey Badger next time.
Well, absolutely. That's a lot of lore for Laura, and there's more to come.
There's a lot. And I wish we had about another hour to really, really dig in, but we just don't. Yeah. So,
yeah.
And I know this was a longer lore section than normal, and I do apologize for that, but hey, man, this is a really good character.
Yeah. Now, speaking of a really good character in the MCU, we mentioned that Laura's inception in X-Men Evolution, which is super cool. The fact that she was introduced through that medium and not comics is just already makes her an outlier. But then the fact that she is, spoiler alert, in Logan, which is now considered canon through the merger, the opening of multiverses, and now, of course, Deadpool bringing quite literally Logan into the mix. Logan from that universe, right? Our Logan that we've grown up on, Hugh Jackman's Logan. And Daphne Keene Fernandez plays X-23. And man, does she almost steal this movie from one of the greatest living actors, I think, which is
can I just get it out of the way? Logan is the best live action superhero movie that's ever been made.
Yeah. And we keep saying it. We keep telling you guys this. Believe it.
It is truly an incredible
film. It's a Western
film.
Yeah. It's just,
it is a Western, and it's Lone Wolf and Cub.
Yep. It's that Messiah complex. Like,
bring it. Yes.
You know what I mean? All of it. It's all there. All the seeds from these other great art forms and inspirations are all there to make Logan happen. Even Old Man Logan, right? Which was a well-received comic and people enjoyed. So the combination of all these things in tandem, plus these incredible performances by Hugh Jackman and Daphne Keene, and don't forget Patrick Stewart returning.
He's great.
Returning, absolutely. So it's just, it is X-23's movie. I know it's called Logan, but it's really her movie, right? I mean, she drives the plot. It's about Logan coming to terms with being a father, very similar to the Cable Messiah complex storyline, coming to terms with being who he's actually meant to be this whole time, which was a father, right? That was Cable's story in that arc. And this is very much Logan's arc.
I think it's very well done. And it does echo the comics, because Logan does have a hard time coming to grips with what his role with Laura should be.
Yep. No, I love it. I love that it's like this amalgamation of Wolverine in the comics and, you know, the Lone Wolf and Cub and this greater Cable storyline with Cable and Hope and all this stuff. And it's just pulling from the best, and it's just making a good movie, to be honest. I mean, it's making a great drama Western film that just happens to be in the mutant universe, right? And their relationship's the heart of this movie. And this girl, I mean, how young she was and how well she performed this role. And I really hope she returns, because of course she's grown up a bit since 2016 when they filmed this, 2017 when it came out. But I don't know. I mean, she's about to be in Star Wars The Acolyte as a Padawan. So let's get more of her on screen.
We can't talk about that. We'll be here another hour.
Yeah, we can't. We can't even
talking about
that threshold.
Talking about the High Republic.
But yeah, just I think she kind of crushes it in this role. And if you haven't seen Logan, I won't spoil anymore. See the film and get back to us. But this is the only thing we have of her in the MCU thus far.
And just to echo your point, I really do hope that Daphne Keene returns as Laura. I think as Daphne has grown up, I think she is just still the perfect casting. Physically, she looks the part. And we already know that she understands the character because she nailed it as a child.
As a child. So good. So good.
Very cool.
Well, Chris, we got to close out our lore like we always do. And you give us those comic book recommendations before we get into strategy.
Well, you're going to hear it a few more times, I'm sure, but go read Messiah Complex. Just do it. And Laura's around in the greater Messiah Complex ecosystem. And there's a lot of good stuff, a lot of good characterization of Laura there. But if you really want to get it, I think it's X-23 Volume 3. And if you just want to read a real quick 3-4 issues, something like that, just read Volume 3, Issues 4 through 7. You're going to get the kickoff of Laura and Gambit's buddy cop movie.
Absolutely do it. More Gambit is always good.
Good and Gambit, too.
Yeah,
well-written Gambit, Gambit is very different from poorly written Gambit. So those are two completely different characters. I like the very subjective, good-written Gambit. Well-written, good. Whatever.
Yeah, well-written, something like that. Yeah. All right, well, let's get right into strategy today with X-23. Her name's X-23, of course. Her alter ego is Laura Kinney. She is a three-threat character. On her healthy side, she has a stamina of 5, and on her injured side, she has a stamina of 5. She's a medium mover, and she's a size 2. Looking very standard here. Defenses are 3-3-2. 3 physical, 3 energy, 2 mystic.
Got to keep that Wolverine.
Yes.
Fantasy alive with the low missing defense.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't want to remember.
None of them do. Yeah, none of them do. That's why the psychic and mystic and mystical attacks, which AMG so brilliantly used the mystic moniker to cover a wide spectrum of abilities.
That was the right call.
Yeah, not only is it like the mystic arts, like the mages and wizards of the world, but it's also like the mind probe type stuff. It's Ebony Maw in the comics as opposed to Ebony Maw in the movies, right? Where he is touching you and talking to you, right? And getting inside your brain. There's layers of that. And I love that just the Wolverines, they don't want that. They don't want you going in their mind, right? And so they don't want to be affected by that stuff.
They've got a lot of stuff. They've had a lot of people playing with their brains, and it's not good. So Jesse, we got to move on here. We got to talk about these attacks. Laura's got 2. They're both physical.
Yeah.
The first is Adamantium Slash. Range 2, strength of 5, power cost of 0. X-23 will gain power equal to the damage dealt. And there are 2 wild triggers here. On a wild, you will trigger bleed, giving the target character the bleed special condition. And on a wild, you will trigger pierce, where you change one of the defending character's successful defense results to a blank.
Absolutely. Already out the gate, one wild will trigger both of these abilities. Keep that in mind. But also, pierce. Pierce on a builder attack is huge because it's kind of like giving you one more dice, right? It's not there.
100%.
And it's mathing out things that would otherwise not make sense that gain you more power over time. Also, when you make more attacks with characters with pierce on their builder attacks like this, like you're just more likely to get more damage through, right? And you're more likely to find that wild eventually throughout the course of the game and get more power through that. So I absolutely love it. And it's the bread and butter of Laura's kit, but let's not forget her spender attack, which is also physical. Claw Rush, range 3, strength of 6, power cost of 2. Best part of this attack, after the attack is resolved, Laura may advance medium, so it's her own version of hit and run. And it also has pierce with those claws. Wild pierce, change one of the defending characters, crit, wild, or blocked results to a blank. What's super great about this is this gives Laura action economy, and it gives her own version of hit and run, like I said. What's not to love here? You pay 2. That's the hit and run cost anyways. You do a spender attack, and then you get to move forward or backwards or sideways, wherever you want to go. But you're giving yourself a free move action out of this.
I really think that Claw Rush is the main focus of her kit. This is her movement. It's also damage dealing. It is her biggest attack. It does have pierce built in on the wilds. No bleed, unfortunately, but you will still be getting that hitting above the dice count feel with the pierce. Range 3 means you're going to be able to pay 2 on round 2, hit someone within range 3, medium up to them, and then adamantium slash them.
Yep.
It is a different play pattern from most
yeah,
characters opening with your spender and using your spender as much as you can with Laura is far different from most MCP characters, but it is only a 2-power cost spender and that medium movement is built in. This is what you want to be doing a lot.
Absolutely. And you're going to be doing a lot because it only costs 2 power, right? And she builds power quite well. We'll figure out here. Let's keep on Laura's path here, though, and talk about her superpowers. Starting with the first one, it's reactive superpower called Frenzy, costs 2 as well. If X-23 dazes or KOs an enemy character with an attack during her activation, this character may use the superpower. After the attack is resolved, this character advances short, then makes an adamantium slash attack. This superpower can be used only once per turn. So once again, explosive action economy if you have the power to do so, because now we're looking at situations where between Claw Rush and Frenzy, Laura can net, I say in quotes, a lot of actions.
100%. If you get the, say you get the Claw Rush, you get to move medium. If you got the daze, Frenzy can then trigger.
Yep.
So you get another short move, a free adamantium slash attack, yep, against anyone around. And we still have a whole nother action to move, do a Claw Rush, try to build power with adamantium slash, whatever the case may be. Her action economy can get out of hand if you're rolling rocks.
Yeah, and sometimes she can just roll really well because she's got things to help her with that and she rolls good dice. So I love this. Frenzy is also an amazing tool on your tool belt to deal with grunts in this game.
Yes, it is.
And it's like a way not only to kill grunts for free, if you maybe daze a main target and then, oh, I dash over short here and maybe I can kill these grunts with a free attack, I say, in quotes, with the Frenzy. It's also just a good way to overkill grunts to trigger Frenzy.
Grunts are a great way to build power with X-23.
Just kill them with Claw Rush and then you could
kill them with the, right? Claw Rush. You get the 2 power for your Frenzy and then you just go on to the main target.
Yeah. So you've got to, in that set of circumstances, you got to have 4 power ready to go, but that's okay because you guaranteed you kill the grunts, right? To trigger Frenzy. Now you've spent 4 power, but you also got a free strike out of this. And so maybe now you're getting 2 or 3 of that power back. And then you still have 1 more action to hit that primary target again, right? With a little bit of power to maybe spend on top of that. So now what's crazy about this, Chris, and I'll say this while we're here, is one of the highest learning curves of Laura. Those are the only 2 ways you can spend power, her spender and Frenzy.
Yep.
So Laura's in this sweet spot where if she has 4 or 6 power, she can light the world on fire. But if she has 10 power, it makes no difference. And it's one of those situations where she lives in this middle ground of a little bit hurt and a little bit of power. And that's when she's at her strongest. But if she's on the other end of that and you're like, well, Laura's already 10 power, like, she's going to have a similar turn to me, against me, the opponent, that she would have if she had 4 or 6 power. And so I say that because you can play around her that way. And also as the Laura player, you can make sure that never happens, right? Always dump your power correctly at the right times and stuff.
Do your best to, but it also opens her up to possibly being a tactics card player as well.
If you have to, for sure. Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, Mystique is always frequently sitting on 8 power or something and no one cares, yeah, because she's just such a solid piece. She never has ways to really spend her power, but that's okay because the role she's playing on the team is so important. And Laura is very similar. Laura is at most explosive when she's in that middle ground. So beware of that. But Chris, she's got some innates. Let's talk about those.
She's got a lot. Let's start with her first one. This is just like Wolverine, Adamantium Skeleton. When determining if this character can be thrown by an effect or special rule, when it is colliding with another character or a terrain feature, X-23 counts as size 3. The adamantium on those claws is very heavy, apparently.
Yeah, because she doesn't have full body like Wolverine does, right?
She does not.
But this obviously can be bad for you if your opponent...
Can be.
But also, it can be good for you because if your opponent only has size 2 throws, they just literally can't throw her, right? So it's a double-edged claw here, right? And the way it works, it's just matchup dependent, right? And I love
100%.
I love that it's either like a boon or a bane, and you know, you don't know until the match, but you can play around it. I mean, that's what turn 0 in MCP is about, where you're like, oh, okay, they have 1 size 3 throw on their team, and I'm going to wait till it's deployed. I'm just going to put Laura on the other flank.
Yeah.
You can make decisions like that. But continuing these innate superpowers that make her who she is, she has assassin training. Love to see it. This character may reroll 1 die in its attack or defense rolls. So now all the math on her 3-3-2 defenses and her 5 and 6 strength attacks, respectively, just change a lot. The math, the numbers are all kind of like +1, especially the attack numbers, because we know attack dice are better in this game and more chances to explode into them, to get them. And also makes her defenses like 3.5, 3.5, 2.5, right? Which is a decent place to be for a 3 threat.
Better than not having it.
I can't tell you how many times this assassin training 2 can win you games, right? It's just one of those things, because it is innate. And because it is just important, one more dice in MCP is important, right? When it comes down to that game. So every time you're rolling one more dice, which is, guess what? Every time Laura's attacking, which is sometimes 3 times a turn, every time Laura's defending, which is often a game, rolling one more dice every one of those times, well, you've got a big pool of dice in your hand at the end of the game that you got to add into your game that you otherwise wouldn't have had if you're playing a different character. That's why Zemo's so good. And same with Deadpool, which we just talked about. So you're just giving yourself more chances to get what you want on the dice, and just more dice that didn't exist.
It's true. And it's just really being able to reroll one of your dice all the time with her, coupled with other rerolls from various faction benefits or character benefits that you're going to be getting and during your team building, it does get a little bit ridiculous. And it can make her just hit so much above that 3 threat rating.
Sure, because now we're looking at her strike being 5 dice with Pierce with a reroll. We're pushing up on like 7 dice,
right?
Math-wise. So, and that's the non-technical way to say it, but that's a good way to like think about it a little bit. Just respect her strikes, because they're so explosive with the reroll and the Pierce that they're essentially, they've got just these moments where it just quite literally the damage just gets through.
And it's super great. It's super, super great. So we've got a couple more innates here. This next one is Big Sis. If an allied Gabrielle Kinney is within range 3 of X-23 and is damaged by an enemy effect after the effect is resolved, X-23 may advance medium towards the character that damaged Gabrielle Kinney. X-23 may move only once per turn as a result of this superpower. So this is just her going to play Big Sister. She's going to protect Honey Badger as best she can. She's going to get up there. And also, this is just, I've used this to great effect over the years. I think Honey Badger is a very, very strong piece in this game.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people really do not, but you couple this with Honey Badger's taunt and Honey Badger's defense dice reduction, and you can get Laura up in some business way faster than your opponent expects.
Yes.
And you can get Laura rolling. And not to mention, Gabby can soften up those targets a little bit for you as well.
Oh, of course. And it's also more unexpected action economy and movement for Laura, right? Which she already has in spades with the Claw Rush if you're playing her right. So it's one of those things where Honey Badger is slept on a little bit, and we will talk about that in one of the next episodes. But additionally, it's the combo of both of them on the field is very akin to Rocket and Groot are great by themselves. We all know this. They're all great pieces. You can play various places, especially in their affiliations. But when Rocket and Groot are together, they get more superpowers that they don't otherwise have. They get more access to abilities. And it's very similar with Gabby and Laura. And I also think like Honey Badger is obviously at her best when Laura's on the field, right? And so that's something I think a lot of people don't fairly assess. And they're forced together because it's a puzzle for your opponent. If two of them are on a flank and Gabby has taunt, as Chris said, and Laura has the move towards Gabby, but then Gabby has the move towards Laura, it really puts this series of rakes out in the yard for your opponent, and they don't know what to do. And that can also win you games because honestly, the decision's on them. I'm just going to respond, right, with these triggers.
Oh, yes.
So that puts you in the driver's seat when both girls are on the table on that side. And yeah, it's absolutely amazing ability and probably her weakest ability on her card, and it's great. So that's just showing you how good this character is, and closing out how good this character is. She's a Wolverine. Of course, she has healing factor. She has healing factor 2, which we adore to see. And now, once again, those defenses that I've alluded to this whole time and this 5-5 health block is deceptive. It is not what it is printed on the card, right? Because of healing factor and because of the reroll on defense, she can just survive things. Also, the fact that she has her own name tactic card, essentially an exceptional healing. I mean, we all love it for all of our healing factor characters, but with Laura, I think it's the most explosive out of all the healing factor characters because she is the least defensive of all of them, right? So for her, it's get out of jail free card.
So Laura, the big counterplay to Laura is just spiking her, right?
Yeah.
You can get 5 damage through, and that is just the best way to deal with her, is to wait till she's activated and just focus fire her down, or just send a couple really big attacks into her and spike her off the board, and exceptional healing deals with one of those spikes.
Yeah, counterspell, right? You're just like, exactly. No, that is not happening. Also, this healing factor is insane for the game at large because Laura has amazing play on objectives that deal damage, right? Once again, it's like I alluded to with the additional dice, with the frenzy and the rerolls. She's cheating the objectives too a little bit. Cubes, all the pay to flips that hurt you, like the meteors and the mutant madmen, right? She's cheating a little bit because everybody else is getting incrementally knocking down by those objectives by playing the game correctly. And so is she, but she's, as long as she goes at the right times and you trigger healing factor at the end of your turn, you're wiping the slate clean of those objectives, right? And you're getting incremental advantages. So she is an auto play on objectives like cubes and stuff, and even things like the madmen traps and even meteors. I think she's a really strong contender for being in your squad, because if you're planning on playing those objectives a lot, because those incremental healing ticks really matter a lot.
Very, very much so. If it's round 3 and you're Laura Kinney just activated and all of that damage they dealt in rounds 1 and 2 are gone because sure. You're being aggressive with her, and then you're playing Kate aggressive early and then kind of cagey a little bit, back her up, get her healed up a little bit. It's really demoralizing to just have a fully healthy X-23 being thrown at someone that just got flipped, or especially if you've been trying to, you know, whittle her down. So healing factor 2 is massive.
No, it's amazing. And nothing changes on her injured side. I love the simplicity of it, but we've already talked about her play patterns, and we'll kind of finish discussing about her play patterns here before we move on to affiliations. Her card might seem simple. It is not simple. The way you play her is very nuanced. There's a lot of decision making with that kind of string together of the action economy that she has kind of baked in, and how to do it. How do you execute it? You know, quite often you're like, with Laura, you're like, every action you do wants to be an attack if you can, right? And so you're asking yourself, how do I do that this round? Oh, well, Gabby's up there. She's in their face. I might taunt, get Laura a free move, and then I claw rush immediately, get another move. I get further up in the action, and then maybe I get 2 strikes off. And you can ask yourself questions like that, but you got to think of these play patterns with her. And also with her, she's really good at retreating too. I mean, she can finish her turn with a claw rush to get laterally back to one of your secures, right? And just say, no, I'm coming back to the secure. I'm still holding it down. In fact, I'm going to healing factor into my turn and really try to hold it down. And so she, not only is she a good secure person, but she's a good person to chase down extracts as well. And honestly, it's depending on the game, it's depending on the matchup, and it's depending on what's currently happening that given turn, which is so many factors. But that's what I love about her. She's very malleable, and she is one of the best 3 threats in the game, I think, for this reason. I think she's just can work in a lot of places, and the skill of the player really is seen on the table when she's out there, right? Like, the skill can be harnessed playing her because she's easy to learn, hard to master. And I think that's a good thing.
I think that's a very good thing. So we do have 3 tactics cards that X-23 is involved in. And I think this is very interesting because we have 2 that we're using her alter ego on. We have, are you sure you want to remember? Of course, she is eligible as a potential Weapon X leader with this Weapon X leadership card. We're not going to go over the Weapon X leadership right now. This is not a Weapon X episode. She is on the Weapon X tactics card dossier, but she's not on there as Laura Kinney. This particular card can only be used by this particular X-23. Any other future versions of Laura that come out, unless they're, will not be able to use dossier. This is the only X-23 we're going to get. We might get X-23, something.
Yeah,
we might get all new, all different Wolverine, Laura Kinney. those will not be able to use this card dossier, but I am going to read this really quick because it's awesome. During the first powered phase, an allied Logan, the Wolverine, Sabretooth, Apex Predator, or X-23 may play this card. Your opponent chooses one of their characters. It is now holding the dossier, which is an asset objective token. If an allied Weapon X character is holding this token, its movement speed becomes long and it adds two dice to its attack rolls. Any character may use the following interact ability. Interact, pick it up, pick up the dossier token. So if X-23 is the one that played this card, this is where it comes in. Additionally, the character that played this card gains the superpower shown below. When attacking the character holding the dossier token, this character may modify or reroll skull results and may reroll any number of attack dice. At the start of this character's activation, if there is an enemy character holding the dossier token within range 2 of this character's first action, must be an attack action targeting that character, if able. So, if Laura plays this card, of course, any Weapon X affiliated character that picks up the dossier gets the long move and adds two dice to their attacks. And any Weapon X character wants to do that automatically. No questions asked. Any character wants that. It's just good. But if she's the one playing this card, she's going to have access to being able to use her Assassin's Reroll to modify skull results, which yep. is very nice. And being able to reroll any number of attack dice against the dossier holder is extremely nice. So playing this card puts your opponent in a very weird position of, do I put this on my toughest character and allow one of these three very scary, very killy characters to have a lot of rerolls and be able to reroll skulls? Or do you put it on a low threat character and just play keep away, right? So yep. it's a very interesting card in how your opponent is going to play it. It puts your opponent in the position of, you know, potentially making a mistake, and you're just waiting to see how you're going to capitalize on that mistakes. Only this Laura will ever have access to that dossier card.
And it's an amazing card. Yeah, it is
very good.
A lot of people call it the Weapon X leadership, right? Because it's so powerful. And
that's really what it is. You're playing Weapon X for that card a lot of the times.
Yeah, and it's just too fun. And
it's
one of these
good.
Characters, all these rerolls. And then also the effect when you have it, I mean, because anybody can pick it up, right? And that's insane. Like the long move on Sabretooth or even someone like Deadpool and stuff, it is just so powerful because Weapon X got really good attacks. So if they get a little bit more movement, right? And then they get modifiers.
And two more dice too.
Yeah, it's crazy. So yeah, and you're going to play Laura every time you're playing Weapon X. So this is always an option. And I definitely think it's one of those things you just got to take a case by case, right? But there is one more card that Laura can play, Chris, that is unaffiliated and active called the Wolverines. Wolverines.
And this one, the key word is Laura Kinney. So future versions of the yes. character will have access to this card as well.
Yep. And this card has been future proof for Wolverine as well, which is fantastic. It's unaffiliated and active. James Logan Howlett and Laura Kinney may spend 3 each to play this card.
Pricey.
One of the highest pricey costs of a taxi card set in the game. Let's see why. While James Logan Howlett and Laura Kinney are within 2 of each other, they cannot be pushed or thrown by enemy effects. They may reroll any number of attack dice, and after attack targeting either of them is resolved, the attacking character suffers 1 damage if it did not daze or KO the targeted Wolverine. This effect lasts until the end of the round. This card's incredible. If you're playing a Logan of some type, Logan or Wolverine, if you're playing a Laura, we have 1 Laura so far, it's one of those things where if that's in your roster, this card is always worth considering in your 10.
Because
it's
just
too powerful to not consider.
I remember when this card was considered very bad too. And I think that's very funny.
That is very funny, especially when stuff like Gamma and Researcher exists. This card is just absolute insanity. And yeah, they're back to back. You're not moving them. You're not pushing them. They're scoring whatever they're on. And then you are really, it's up to you. Do you really want to come into their bubble and get attacked with all these rerolls? Do you want to attack them and get little pings of damage back? It puts the opponent in a really tough spot.
And against some of affiliations that are really built on control, and I'm thinking a lot of the Wakanda affiliations.
Sure, yeah.
The Wakanda leaderships, just really built around pushes and throwing things off, people off of objectives. this card just is a spanner in the works. Just,
I love it.
Really screws everything up for a round for your opponent.
Oh, it absolutely does. It just says, this is my round, right?
Yes.
And I did this at the right moment. Now, what's interesting is there are subtle ways to separate Logan and Laura and turn this offline, right? But those are few and far between. That's the tough part, is like getting to that point where, do you even want to deal with them and get in their area and separate them? Is it worth it? Is that worth the risk? Because they're going to get one activation before you get to go back to your next activation. So it's cool. It's one of those great cards. It is definitely a auto include if Wakanda's in your meta and you're playing Logan and Laura in your list in some capacity. It's also really good into some of the control teams, like Chris was alluding to, Hellfire or Criminals, or these teams that really don't want to fight as much and want to displace, right? And this kind of gets in their way as well, because they can't do the thing they're best at, displacing. And then they have to come to you and give you rerolls, which is not great. And I also think it's just always worth considering for something like the Researcher, right? Where Logan and Laura are both going to be on the Researcher no matter what. That's going to be the most important objective on the map. I promise you it will be. Whatever else is on the map, it's the most important. And it's a tool in your toolbox, round two, round three, whatever, right? To play.
Exactly.
And just say, no, this is my Researcher. You're not taking it. So I love that. But we got to move on to Laura in our affiliation corner and talk about where she's affiliated and some places we could splash her that are really exciting. Shocking no one, she's in the X teams. She's in Uncanny X-Men. She's in Weapon X, and she's in X-Force.
Exactly as it should be. You know, I think you could make an argument that maybe she could be an Avenger tag character as well based on her lore, but I don't think she needs it in game. So I think it's fine.
Yeah. And who knows, if we get another version of Laura, maybe she'll have different allegiances, right? Further in her career.
You know, I know absolutely nothing about what Atomic Mass has coming down the pipe in any way, shape or form. I am extremely uninformed in that area. I am expecting a Laura Kinney Wolverine model, an all new, all different Wolverine at some point.
Yeah, I want it so bad. Let's talk about these teams she's in though, Chris. She's a staple on all of them. What do you know? You don't play Weapon X without her. You don't play X-Force without her. You don't play Uncanny X-Men these days without her. And Uncanny X-Men's the most shaky spot of these.
Well, there's a lot more choice with affiliated three threats, and there's a lot more choice in play style. You might not always want to go murdery in Uncanny, but X-Force and Weapon X, you're locked in to trying to take models off the table. And she's very good at taking models off the table. I think she's really good in all of these teams. It's really nice and refreshing to have a character that doesn't expressly majorly benefit from a ramp team.
That's true. She doesn't really love ramp, no.
It's nice to be able to get maybe a claw rush off round one, but other than that, past that, it's very little in the way of return there for her. But she's just a really great fighting three threat.
Yeah.
You can really fit her in anywhere you want to.
Yeah, and the healing factor and the rerolls on defense too give her a little bit of staying power too. So you can
a little bit more than normal and exceptional healing.
Exceptional healing. So you can slaughter anywhere. So let's talk about those places you could slaughter. And you know, in lieu of not saying the entire roster of MCP affiliations, let's hit on some big ones. Sam Wilson Avengers.
I think
it's good.
She's incredible in Sam Wilson Avengers. Being able to get extra movement on her,
one more heal,
extra healing, or taking some effects off, really, really nasty.
It can also tee her up for like turns where, you know, she maybe got hurt in round two or something, but then your opponent's swinging back at hard in round three and they're dazing a lot of models, but Laura's a little bit tucked away. Well, she's healing a lot, and then she's going to come in and maybe finish some kills and get back in the fight. I think it's good. She's not outstanding, let's say, in all the Avengers teams. I mean, I also think in Wild Steve, she's obviously got a lot of play, because when she is got a ton of extra power, she can kind of like get rid of it and she can get more dice from rolling what she wants, which is Wilds, right? And so it's kind of a force multiplier. Same with Wolverine in that team too, where it's just characters with Pierce and Wild Steve are just good. It's just a fact. So that's where she can fit with the Avengers. But let's talk about the Cabal. I think she's exceptional in Cabal, especially original Red Skull and new Red Skull. New Red Skull, where she can treat a skull as a crit, and okay, she might take a damage from it. That's fine.
She's going to heal it. Yeah.
Yeah. So absolutely amazing in new Red Skull, and in even old Red Skull, where if she is getting two or three attacks off a turn, which she is, she's X-23. More chances to gain power on every single time you attack, right? Mm. More chances to like even, you know, maybe pay for some of those generic tactics cards for the Cabal team, right? And just maybe she's the patch-up player in that team. Pair the fact, too, that Cabal has this kind of innate secondary feature of their affiliation, which I mentioned because it's always there, where it's like one of the Barons or Zola rerolling dice all the time for the team. So they've kind of got this subset affiliation of rerolls on top of their power gain through attrition. Well, there you go. It's everything Laura wants. She wants rerolls. She wants to deal attrition. She wants to fuel her team power. So Cabal's a really good place to do that. You know, and any team with rerolls, let's just knock all those out real quick. She's good. I mean, Wakanda, Defenders under Daredevil. It's the type of thing that makes her more explosive than she already is. And she's already one of the most explosive three threats in the game. So you can lean into that bit.
Speaking of, I really do not mind her in something like Green Goblin Spider Foes.
Yeah, Oscorp weaponry.
Yep.
Defensive reroll.
Forcing them to get an unlikely success twice on a defense dice, just getting more damage through.
And then you pierce the other one or something.
And then you pierce the rat. Yep, exactly.
It's ugly. It's definitely ugly.
It can be.
Yeah, this is just showing how good she is, right? It's like name and affiliation. Does she work there? Yes, probably. Yeah. And she's one of those characters that, since she's come out, either Chris or myself or both of us have currently had her in one of our lists at any given
point. Oh, yeah. That's...
if you ask us, it's like there's like a 90% chance. And
if we're playing, one of us is playing X-23 and one of us is playing Lizard. That's just how it is.
For sure. Right. It's like, so...
if not, both playing both.
For sure. I would say she's my second most played model off after Lizard. And you guys have been following the show. You know my tenure with Lizard. So it's one of those things where... that's how good she is.
She's my preferred Weapon X leader.
Yeah.
She's my leader when I run at Weapon X, and I did run Weapon X a lot for about a year. I'd say she was my leader 85% of the time.
That's how good she is, you know? And it's not even that she's overtuned. It's that she's an all-arounder damage dealer, right? And, you know, we've got a couple of them in the game, and they're all excellent. It's kind of like pick your flavor. Zemo's the same way, right? Still, to this day, from the core set, number one. We've got so many solid three threats in the game. It's really a flavor to taste, but I think Laura is one of those ones. She has such versatility that she doesn't even necessarily have to deal damage, right? I've won so many games without Laura performing a single attack because she had an extract the whole game and she was rotating to secures and scoring secures the whole game because I have exceptional healing and I have healing factor too. And it's just a big question for my opponent. Really, do I want to put all these resources into taking that extract when I can take this extract over here?
Right.
Unless she has games she doesn't get to attack, and that's perfectly fine. That's MCP. It's you win games differently every set of circumstance.
True.
I just also want to showcase how good she is, the fact that she can do that if she has to. Now, her best life is not holding an extract, diving enemy lines, and taking one of their extracts away, right, by getting a kill and double, triple tapping, things like that.
For me, it's that, but on B maps a lot.
Yeah.
With that spread, being able to use the claw rush to get to maximize her movement and getting two attacks in one activation on two different characters on two different secures.
Yes, it's possible.
It's not only possible, but it's a strong suit of hers. And if you get onto that back secure where there may be a two threat sitting and waiting, opens up that frenzy play too. So
yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned that, Chris, because one of the places I have written down here for her is Midnight Suns, where she's not a Midnight Suns. She can't have access to their amazing tactics cards, but with that place in tandem with her claw rush, it just gives her that little bit more of action economy and that little bit more ability to get on those B and D maps where she needs to be, right? Because sometimes, especially the D map, when I say you're going across the map to the back one, you just don't make it, right? But if Laura had one little bump from Bump in the Night, which, you know, we already mentioned, she doesn't have a ton of way to spend power. So her having excess power makes things like Bump in the Night and stuff so much more accessible. It's an amazing tool. It's an amazing tool for her to have. And you're noticing a trend where it's just similar to Deadpool, we talked about recently. We're in this space of AMG's really dialed in the threes and through erratas and just through game design and balance of everything else. And this is your choice of what you want. I think a lot of things we said about Deadpool are very true with her as well, where it's like, which one do you want? But on their worst day, they're just rotating around, scoring points, and they're getting maybe some little bits of damage. Like they're not spiking, and that's fine because they're helping you win MCP regardless.
We like winning MCP here.
That's how you do it. And Laura and Deadpool are going to absolutely help you do it. And those Weapon X and X-Force teams, they're going to be two of the first models you grab. And yeah, I think the X-Men players have a little bit harder time because, as you said, Chris, maybe not even spoiled for choice is the way to say it, but just they do have options. And then you've got Domino in that affiliation as well. And Domino's actually pretty good in X-Men because the Stormhop fixes her one issue, which is no action economy, right? So X-Men players, I know myself, frequently are in this position where we're like, our last slot is like, maybe like, okay, it's a three threat. And now this is even
but changed. Which one?
Now it's even changed with Kitty out, but we'll exclude Kitty because I'm talking about before Kitty was out. And it was like, am I taking Domino, X-23, or Magic, right? Which damage dealer three threat am I bringing? And that question is completely entirely up to you, depending on what objective set you're playing and maybe what your meta looks like. But I can guarantee you Laura is the perfect blind grab. And then you can nuance it later into Magic or Domino if, you know, you find a need for that.
I think that is extremely well put and the right play. I think the first time you're playing an affiliation, or if you're not sure exactly what you're going up against, you just grab X-23.
She's that good. And, you know, similar to Lizard, I mean, not only is she just a solid model, but she's a model we love, a character we love. So that makes it way easier for me too.
Absolutely.
I have to love all the characters I'm playing, and I love this character a lot. So the fact that she fits within my teams, I'm very lucky in MCP, and she's always out for me in some capacity, right? Like whether it's in the 10 or on the field, right? So give her a shot if you haven't done so, and get back to us and let us know what teams you like to play.
Fury's Finest is supported by our wonderful patrons. You can become a Fury's Finest patron by going to patreon.com/Fury's Finest.
Find us everywhere online. Find us on X at Fury's Finest Cast, Instagram, Facebook, Twitch at Fury's Finest, and email us at furiousfinest@gmail.com.
Thanks to Approaching Nirvana for the show's music, and please help spread the word. Rate, review, subscribe. It all really, 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 really helps. Yeah, it all helps. That's it.
You can find me and Chris several spaces online. You can find me, Jesse, all at the same place, at Jesse Aiken. That's JesseEaKin. Reach out to me about MCP, Star Wars, Shatterpoint. The list goes on and on and on. I'll happily talk about X-23. And check out my Star Wars Shatterpoint show. Hello there, a Star Wars Shatterpoint podcast. Everywhere podcasts can be found. Means a lot. Chris, where can everyone find you?
You can find me on Discord. I am Strong Style, Chris Finest, in all the MCP related discords that I'm in. And you can check out my NBA podcast, Orange Futures, depending on when this episode comes out. Man, the playoffs are crazy, or boy, we're gearing up for the playoffs.
Awesome. Well, we hope you guys enjoyed this episode on one of our favorite characters in Marvel and one of our favorite modern characters, right? We've done this a lot lately, Chris. Some really awesome modern characters.
We've got a real great list of episodes coming up. They're all really exciting, fun characters, a lot of newer characters. Expect being able to go a little bit deeper into the lore like we did today. So good stuff.
Absolutely good stuff. Well, until next time, thanks for listening, true believers.
Excelsior.
The world has gotten even stranger than you already know.
At this point, I doubt anything would surprise me.
$10 says you're wrong.